copyright forum of Christian leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Where are the lost? We're talking about people who are lost. Actually, I don't know if any of you have seen the television series Lost. I watched the first one. I watched the second one, and I got really bored with the third one because I realized the program was actually hopelessly lost in its philosophical mess. And it was actually quite a good analogy of where we're at. But where are the lost? We say, what do we mean by lost? How are people lost? I like the biblical analogy. They're like sheep without a shepherd, confused. They don't know where to be fed. And I want to suggest there are three groups a lot. First of all, there are people who go to church. I go to church. There are people who will attend your church who are not believers. Even in evangelical churches, I've noted a tendency to regard almost everyone who comes as a believer. Now, the thing is, in most of our cultures, it's actually quite hard. There are people who are quite clearly believers, or at least give all the signs of being believers. There are people who are quite clearly not believers, like the man who came to me and said, David, I'd like to join the church, but I don't believe in any of that Jesus stuff. So like I said, that's a fairly big deal here. You know, there are things that are optional extras, but Jesus is not an optional extra. But there are an awful lot of people who are in between. And what I mean by that is, we don't know, they don't know sometimes, whether they're believers or not. I hate the jargon, but they're on a journey. And sometimes you have to be really careful not to take the plant that's growing and pull it just because you want to be able to say, got another convert. Sometimes you've got to leave God. I mean, my personal approach would be to preach the gospel passionately, but not to compel people to believe. It's only the Holy Spirit who can do that. I don't do a kind of take it or leave it thing, but it's God who's got to convert. You see how that works? We had a big meeting, but not a big meeting, but four of us went and met with the local imam from the mosque because we were doing some work amongst Muslims. And it was very interesting. There was a white convert, a lecturer actually, who was very aggressive against us. And he says, you're out trying to convert people. And I said, no, we are absolutely not out trying to convert people. He said, what are you trying to do? I said, well, I'm a Calvinist. What does that mean? I said, my theology is I can't convert people, only God can convert people. So I said, I'm not out trying to convert anyone. Well, you're being racist. I said, no, I'm being the opposite. I said, my view is that the love of God has to be shared with everyone and that we were doing it, but not with Muslims or with Asians. So that wasn't really fair, was it? And the imam interrupted and said, excuse me, he said, I would like to agree with my brother. That was me. I said, I would like to agree with my brother. He is right. God is sovereign. Only God can convert people. And it was like, the God who answers by fire, let him be God. I thought, great, that's where your theology comes in as well. But, you know, you get people who will say they go to church. We don't know where they're at. But one of the things that happens in revival, Keller's latest work, he's talking about revival. And one of the things he says is people who always thought they were Christians suddenly realize that they weren't. And they are converted. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing when you see that happening. So there are the lost who are in church, they're within the community. They've maybe grown in the community. They've maybe come along to the community. Please, by the way, don't fall into the trap of thinking if I get them to say this prayer or do this formula, then they're really converted. Because an awful lot of people will go along with that just to be part of the community. Let them know that they can be part without that. You're not in the position to judge whether they're really Christian or not. Time will show that. The Lord knows those who are His. The next one is there are those who say they visit. You know, I might visit occasionally. They may pop in. Again, I want to suggest that your church is in trouble if that doesn't happen. I spoke to a minister not so long ago who said that in a whole year, he'd never seen someone pop into his church. You're in trouble. Real trouble if that's the case. You know, you need... Imagine it. Think of it this way. People will come into church. Mostly, they will not keep coming or be converted straight away or whatever. They will come back, occasionally come back. It's one in 10 that will come back after visiting you once. You know, it takes a lot of time. And so you do need people to visit occasionally. There are people who you can reach out to who will come. I think myself, when I go back next week, there are a couple of people I'll probably invite to Christianity Explored. I could invite to come to our church service. And please don't be afraid to do that as well, because it is a great showcase at one level. And I could do that, and they would come. And we need to make sure that there's scope for them. But the third group are what I would call the never in a month of Sundays people. Why would I go to church? I have no interest in photography whatsoever. Why would I go to a photography club? Somebody actually once asked me, David, would you like to come on a shopping trip? Yeah, right? No way. It's like asking, you know, if I asked my wife, should we have a romantic date together? Let's go to a football match. She says, I'm suing for divorce at that point. You know, it's just crazy. I've no interest. Most people, why would they go to church? There's nothing there for them. We say, we've got great music. Yeah, I get better music going to a concert. We've got great entertainment. We've got really nice people. We've got great food. We've got rubbish coffee. I mean, whatever. Why would anyone go to church? The only reason that you would really, really be really keen for them to go, because it's the only reason they'll come back, is because they want to find out about God. And that's wonderful when that happens. I think of four young guys who came in, and they came out the back. They came as I'm standing at the door. They came out, shook my hand. They wouldn't tell me their name. I said, "What's your name, guys?" They said, "No. We don't want you to know. We don't want anyone to know. We don't want to be welcome. We don't want to be hugged. We don't." You know, I don't know what they thought was going on in the church. We've only come here to find out about God. That's all. That's a pretty good reason. And eventually they came back, and one of them kept coming and is now with us. But it's interesting. Where do people go if they want to find out about God? It's a wonderful program. Well, it wasn't a wonderful program. It's one of these rubbish reality TV shows. And it was about a kid from Derby in England who was 17 years old, sexually promiscuous, homosexual, drugs, drink, the whole lot. And he goes to Atlanta with a girl to do a kind of parent swap, where he stays at the home of an African-American pastor and his wife in this very strict Black Baptist church. The program was fascinating. It was unbelievable. The clash of cultures and everything. At the end of the program, I never ever forgot this. It really, really moved me. The kid's being filmed in the back of a taxi going back to the airport. And he says, "These people are all right, eh?" "What do you mean they're all right?" "They're really into this Jesus book, eh? They really like Jesus." He says, "They really believe in him, don't they?" He says, "These are good people. And it's Jesus." And then he said, "See, when I go back to England, where can I find Jesus? Is he in the Yellow Pages?" You know, that's the phone book for the... And I was so moved by that. I wrote an article, which we got published in Yellow Page format. Where can I find Jesus? Wouldn't it be fantastic if people thought, I want to find out about Jesus, and I've heard about that church. I can go there, and I will hear about Jesus, and I will find Jesus. You know, that's... So, but these people, it's never in a month of Sundays, so you actually have to go out to them. You have to communicate to them. Don't expect them to come to your church. In fact, almost to a little bit of reverse psychology. I know an elder who said that he thought the attendance at the prayer meeting would increase if he banned people from attending it, and you had to get a ticket to come. There's a little bit, I mean, there was a couple I'm marrying recently, and the guy was, no way was he ever going to come near church. And I said to him, "Look, I don't want you in church anyway." He said, "Why not?" I think, "Because you're a godless pagan, and you just, you know, there's no point in you coming." He said, "What? You don't want me to come to church?" I said, "No, you're not interested." I said, "If you're interested, I want you. If you're not interested, stay away, please. I don't want you to come to church because I'm going to marry you. I said, yeah, I'm going to marry you anyway, whether you come to church or not. I said, you come to church if you want to find out more. And you should want to find out more if you're an intelligent person. That. But if you're stupid enough that you don't want to find, stay away. You know. Now, people, actually, that's the reality of the situation. We did, this was a small thing, but when, remember that dreadful book, Dan Brown, The Da Vinci Code? Another church asked us if we would do a joint venture with them. We were going to do it in our thing, but we decided we'd do it in the Dundee Contemporary Arts Centre. You know, it's where all the trendy foreign films are shown, and I love it. You know, you go and drink white beer and stuff like that. And we went down there and we asked if we could hire the cinema to do a talk, a debate on the Da Vinci Code. And they said, no, you can't hire it, but we'll do the event for you. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, we'll run it. We'll charge people £3 a head. We'll do this. And I said, ah, come on. You can't charge. We'll buy all the tickets and give them away. I said, no, David, don't give it away to people. People don't value it if you give it away. People who want to come to it, let them pay. We'll give you £1, which was wonderful. So instead of us actually paying to hire this place, what happened was we got paid to do evangelism. That is a win-win situation all the time. I wish it would happen more often. I could pay for my church building. But it was packed, absolutely sold out, 200 people. And I remember this man coming up to me and he said, that was fantastic. That was absolutely brilliant. He says, I wouldn't have come to this if it had been organized by the church and if you had an agenda. And I said, I've got bad news for you. What's that? I said, it was organized by the church and we do have an agenda. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, it's St. Pete's Church and Logan St. John's Cross Church. We organized it together with the DCA. He says, oh, yeah, that's all right. I said, but what's your agenda? I said, my agenda was to get people to talk about the Da Vinci Code and see if there was anything there about Jesus. Or he says, no, no, he says, that's fine. He says, by agenda, I mean, you're trying to get me to your church. People think we're selling something, trying to get them into our organization and stuff. You've really grasped Christian evangelism if you're prepared to give yourself heart and soul to communicate the gospel and see people converted who go to another church. Then you've got it. If you're prepared to see that, then you've got it. We've seen people converted who've gone off elsewhere. And that's just, you know, you think, oh, it's not helped building the church, but actually it is. So, where are the lost? Belonging before believing. Let me just go through some of these. You're welcome. We're saying to people, you are welcome. But we're also saying to people, you don't actually belong. You know, you come to visit my daughter in my home, you're welcome. But you're not part of my family, and there's some way to go before you're becoming part of my family. You know, there's all the tests you have to go through. No, but in the church, we welcome people, absolutely. That's this distinction between members and adherents. You come along. There are lots of people who think they don't come to church unless they're members. We actually, we've go the opposite way. We say to people, come to church, but you can't become a member until you believe in Jesus, until you trust in Jesus. But then they look around and say, well, who's members and who's not? We don't have separate uniforms. We don't have, you welcome people, but you don't say, well, look, you're part of our group. You belong. Because if you don't belong to Christ, you don't belong to his church. And that's one of the tough messages you communicate to people. Now, tied in with that is the significance of the sacraments. Don't move on that. I think that's the next one. Yep, it is. Basically, baptism and communion. What is baptism? It is, we often describe it as our witness to Christ, but, you know, it's our sign of being baptized into his church, belonging to his church. It's the initiation rite. And we're saying, but you belong. I mean, if you're from a Baptist tradition, obviously, you're saying, I'm professing my faith, I'm confessing I belong to the church. If you're from an infant Baptist tradition, we're saying that the child belongs to the church as well, and people can argue about that. I've done as many adult baptisms as infant baptisms because of the culture that we live in. But for me, it's a really important thing that people say, this is really the badge of belonging. Also, the Lord's Supper, communion, Eucharist, whatever you call it. We still operate this practice of what we call fencing the table, which is really inviting people to sit at Christ's table, but saying to those who are not Christians, you're not welcome. Don't take communion if you are not a Christian. But make sure the next time you're in this church, when there's a communion, you're able to take it because you become a Christian. But actually, you are out. You're not part of this fellowship. You should not take this bread. You should not take this wine because you're not part of Christ's church. If you're from another church, that's fine. If you're, I mean, not another church apart from Christ's church, but another church apart from my denomination, that's fine. But you are not. You are excluded. And people go, oh no, that's not nice. Forget nice. That's the reality. And people see that and they appreciate that. And when you welcome new members in, it is a wonderful thing when that happens and people go, yeah, I get it. I was lost, but now I've been found. I was blind, but now I see. I was dead in sin, but now I've been adopted into Christ's family. The next one is community and conversion. How many times do people say we need community? What is community? Is it all going living in a house together? Don't think so. This man here is in my congregation. Love him to bits. Sharing a house, no way. I mean, we won't even share a room here. It's just, what is community? Yes, of course there are people who will go and set up a commune in that sense. But community is common sharing. People see that. Very simple things. My Christian neighbours across the road from us share a lawnmower. Why do we need two lawnmowers? We've got two small lawns. Why do we need two lawnmowers? Share cars, share pain, share sorrow, share suffering. People become part of the community. I'm thinking of one lady in our church just now who's come from a very dysfunctional, disoriented background and always been used to being seen as a victim. Do we treat her as a victim? Do we treat her as a case? No. You're now a sister. You're part of the community. You've got responsibilities. Yes, you've got a background. Yes, you've got difficulties. Yes, you've got different issues. But we are all one in Christ. We are equal. Equality, in a Christian sense, is hugely important in the Christian church. I was going to say I love, but I don't. I hate the way that our modern culture has taken great words like equality and liberalism and diversity and turned them into ugly things. We need to claim them back and not use them. I'm for tolerance. I'm for equality. And I say that to people. We need to take the language and rebaptize it. A couple of other things and then we'll stop. Bringing in the sheaves. How does it work? Church planting. Yes. Church planting, again, please tell me in your own cultures, church planting is all the buzzword. Everyone wants to do church planting. My view is that an awful lot of church planting is just church repotting. It's just Christians moving to a different context and setting up work. Church planting is essential. In Scotland today, if we planted 7,000 churches with 100 people in each one, 7,000 with 100, we would only be back to the church attendance we had when I began my ministry. That's 7,000. Now, Germany, France, Sweden, Ukraine, Romania, Bulgaria. How many tens of thousands of churches do we need? We do have to, but for me, whether you call it church planting or church revitalization, we need renewed churches and we need a whole lot more churches. We need community churches. I've mentioned the ethnic thing. Please do not create a church that is plus people like us. A powerful apologetic. I'm not going to say that again of a multi-ethnic church. Building based evangelism. That's the next one. I used to think you don't need a building. And it's true, you don't. But I'll tell you this. A building can be really, really helpful. Especially in Scotland when it's chucking it down rain. As it occasionally does in our sun-soaked paradise. But it's not just that. I've noticed this, that an awful lot of people, because we've got what they perceive to be a proper church building, it is a barrier to some, but it's an attraction to others because they don't think of us as some weird kind of sect. In a lot of urban communities, and especially working class communities, middle class people go in and think, well, all we have to do is invite people round to our house and they'll want to come. Come to our house for a Bible study. No. People look at you and go, you weird? It's like the child catcher in Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Hello, little girl, come into my, here's lollipops. Come to my house, we'll give you food. And they're going, these people are really weird. It's like they're going to kidnap us and turn us into aliens. If you don't normally invite people to your house, don't invite them to your house for a Bible study. If they've never been at any other thing, then it doesn't make any sense. They're going to think you're some kind of pervert. And I put it that strongly because that is how people think. So in actual fact, having a proper church building sometimes can be a real advantage. And from my point of view, being called St. Peter's was wonderful because all these Catholics kept coming in. I was great. I remember one lady came in one time and
she was 80 years old. She came down to the front. You could tell she was Catholic.
Big, crossed herself, knelt, sat down, listened to the whole service, came out. She said to me on the way out, "Father, I've not been at the Catholic Church for 50 years. I've not been at church for 50 years, she said, not the Catholic Church. I said, "Yes." I said, "Well, welcome back." And she says, "My," she said, "how the Catholic Church has changed." Do you know this? I hadn't the heart to tell her that we weren't. And then there was another time, there was a girl came in and she was a 17-year-old single mum. And she came out and she said, "Father, I'll not be at the 6:30 Mass." And I said, "I'm sorry, but," I said, "we're not actually a Catholic. Didn't you notice?" And she says, "Well, I wondered why there was nothing on the walls. And I wondered why you didn't have one of those dog collar things." I said, "Well, what did you think?" She says, "Well, I thought you were just one of those trendy priests." And it was just, but small thing, the building, small thing with that, by the way, one of the things we do is we say the Apostles' Creed. Because then most of the Catholics go, "Okay, they're all right." You know, there are things. So actually, your building can be very useful. The one thing I would make an appeal about this is this. Do not have a building that's open one day a week. You should have it open 7 days a week. You should really make use of it as a church facility, a community facility, and so on. You want, the ideal would be that you want your building to be so known in your community that people would say, "Do you know, if I want to find out about Jesus, I can go to that church at any time and someone will tell me." You know, and you can make use of the building. Don't let the building is, again, it's just a tool. Don't let it become the church. But you can do building-based evangelism. Preaching. Let me just say about that. Preaching is hugely important. I know there's lots of people say, no, in our culture it's all sound and visual and you don't do preaching anymore. Look, what do you think the Reformation was in Europe? How was Christianity communicated before the Reformation? Miracle plays, all that kind of stuff. What changed? Education, communication through the word. We can still do that. We should still be able to do that. We need people who will preach and communicate. 10 churches in Edinburgh were surveyed as to why they were growing and developing. This was a secular organization. It was reported in the Scotsman newspaper. Did this survey. The number one reason that all of these churches were growing, whether they were charismatic, independent evangelical, Baptist, Presbyterian, the number one reason was the teaching. That was the number one reason that people gave that they came. And yet, I mean, Tim Keller will say the same thing. In New York, he says that the non-Christians prefer to come to his traditional service, the Christians, the jazz service. And the Christians say they want the jazz service because it will attract non-Christians. Uh-uh. That's not how it works. How it works is people need to hear about Jesus Christ, and Christ needs to be communicated, and he is primarily communicated through preaching and teaching, which is why we have really got to help people to push and work at that. It's why you need a structure in a church which has people who do diaconal work. You have people who do the pastoral work, and you have people whose passion is preaching Christ. There's a lot more to say on that, but we'll do that in the discussion. Worship. A simple mantra for me, I'm talking about praise. I know that all of our life is worship. But a simple mantra for me is keep it simple, keep it scriptural. Simple, by the way, sorry, doesn't mean simplistic. It doesn't mean you have to sing "If I Were a Butterfly" every time. You know, keep it simple so that people can join in. Keep it scriptural, keep it spiritual. Don't complicate things. And then you'll find people can come from lots of different cultures in that respect. And again, that's something that we probably need to discuss. Beyond the borders, if you're going to grow a church and reach out and develop your church through evangelism, the church itself must have an appetite for the gospel across the world. So, again, I'm not setting up St. Pete's as a massive example, but one of the things we did from the very beginning was we took the book Operation World and every Sunday we prayed through it. And that's now, it's part of the DNA of our congregation that we pray for missionaries, that we pray for, we in fact, we're now at a stage where I'm not sure what home mission is and what international mission is, isn't it all just mission? And, you know, when you've got a Jewish girl from Seattle being baptized in a Scottish Presbyterian church in Dundee, and the first person being baptized, a Japanese convert who then went on to become a missionary in India and is now coming back to be married in Scotland and to work in Edinburgh. You know, it's just all over the place. But if you're going to grow a church, it's got to be a genuine world vision, especially a small church. You know, we're part of the worldwide church. All right, questions. Interesting exercise. List the ways that your church is reaching the lost, is already reaching the lost. Number two, list the additional ways that you think it could. And again, number three, back to the ghetto mentality. What are the dangers in the Christian ghetto mentality? Because I put that back in again because I think it's so important in this. So, these are huge, significant questions. And we have to answer them honestly. And you also have to think a wee bit laterally, because it doesn't mean, when you say list the ways that your church is already reaching the lost, it doesn't mean how many evangelistic meetings you're having. It just doesn't mean just that. It also means, how is that doctor who is in your congregation being a witness in that hospital? How is that woman being a witness in her school? How is that student being a witness? How is that lorry driver being a witness? You know, how are they reaching? Because that's the primary means that the church reaches. Is that's what we do. We go out. You know, I've heard some people put it this way. They say we come to church to witness to God's grace to us, and we go out to worship Him by witnessing. I do think for myself, you know, what do I do? Do I say to the congregation, I want you to invite people to Christianity Explored? And then I look at my own friends in life and say, I haven't got anyone to invite. I don't know anyone. I can't pray for anyone. Then God help me for being a hypocrite. You know, I have to lead by example, and so do you guys as well. Now, I'm going to leave it there. I'm sorry that I don't have all the answers, but I honestly do believe that the more we as churches see ourselves as places that are there to communicate the gospel, and we're prepared to do so without thinking, well, how are we going to grow through this? How are we going to, what's going to benefit the church? If we just think about communicating the gospel, not out of desperation, but out of joy, then I think we'll see a phenomenal difference. So thank you. You've been incredibly patient.